I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sadi Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark. And I'm very pleased to be joined today by Brad Thor, who is the author of the new entry in the Scott Harbath series, Shadow of Doubt. Very exciting. Shares the name of one of my favorite movies, which is fun. But the new book is out today. We're talking about it today, Tuesday, August 6th. This will go up on Saturday, so it'll be in bookstores. You can get it on Amazon.com, et cetera, et cetera. Thanks for being on the show today, Brad.
It's my pleasure. Now I don't know what I'm going to do with a good hour on Saturday. I'll be able to listen to whatever Sarah's got, but I normally do you and Sarah. You're my double feature, as I'm a huge Bulwark fan. So glad to be here, though. Thanks for doing this, Sonny.
That's very nice. And thank you for being on the show. Like I said, I wanted to get you on for a while, but you keep getting snapped up by the other hosts here. Charlie's had you on. Tim's had you on. So I finally was able to swoop in and get you first. All right, so let's talk your new book. But before we talk your new book, I want to discuss a broader book industry thing.
Sure.
This is a thing I have heard from folks. I hear it said a lot. Men don't buy books. And I find that hard to believe.
I do too.
I find that hard to believe when I see your books, the James Patterson series, Vince Flynn. I see a lot of successful series of books that I think are aimed at men.
Yep.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. What's your sense on this men don't read books phenomenon?
So we have a good balance of men and women who read my books, and I think plenty of men buy books. In fact, one of the coolest things that we've learned is that a dad will turn his son onto a Brad Thor book, or a son will turn his father onto a Brad Thor book. And listen, word of mouth, when you're in the book business, word of mouth is the absolute best thing. It's better than TV ads. It's better than billboards. And so my experience has been men buy plenty of books. And but I hear that too. There's a lot of women who work in the publishing industry. There's a lot of men, but I probably say, just based on my experience, there's more women than men that work in the publishing industry. I don't know if that impacts, that shouldn't impact the view of who the customer is, but the book business is interesting because most of the data about customers and things like that is very anecdotal. The only people who are really up there with collecting data would be somebody like a Barnes & Noble with their, people that order from them online and people who are Barnes & Noble members, and then, of course, Amazon. And Amazon is notoriously bad about sharing its data, so you don't get a lot of data from Amazon. But there's little things around the edges that you can pick up and that kind of a thing. So as far as I'm concerned, men are huge readers. They're huge readers of my books. We have a lot of women readers as well, and it's been really good for me. But what you're saying, I've heard throughout my career that men don't buy books, and I just don't see it. Like, we're doing this interview before I do a book signing here in Texas, and if you come and look at the crowd tonight, it's going to be packed with men and women.
Yeah. And I know your books sell because you're on a book tour. This is another thing I hear mostly from authors now, not on the business side of thing, but authors. It's I would love to come to Dallas to do a book tour, but I can't afford to. I can't afford to send myself. They're not sending me, which is a big change in the industry over the last, 20 or 25 years, right? I feel like authors used to get out there a bit more and are doing that less just because it's expensive. It's cost.
it is expensive. And so, you know, I'm a big believer in not I have to do a book tour. I get to do a book tour. It is a one-word shift. I realize how fortunate I am that my publisher says, when we put him out there, he does very well. The bookstores love him. The fans really enjoy seeing him and interacting with him at book signing events and everything. So this is really the first time I've been out since COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a big deal because I had done virtual things and all that kind of stuff. And now I'm out doing these book tour events again. And it's terrific because yeah, I don't know if anybody from Simon & Schuster is going to hear this, and it won't be the first time I've said it, so they probably know it in the you know, in the seventh floor at Simon & Schuster, but I don't work for Simon & Schuster. I work for the readers, Sonny. Those are the people who keep me employed. Those are the people I want to keep happy. I want everybody at Simon & Schuster happy, of course, but at the end of the day, it's the readers who keep me in business. So being able to come out on the road and meet people and do all that kind of stuff, that for me is the biggest joy of doing a book tour. So I get to say thank you to the people who have helped me have this incredible career.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and it's I know it's nice to meet the folks who actually consume what you do. It's one of the things we love doing here at the Bulwark when we have live events. You know, people come up and talk to us. It's great.
Yeah.
It's just so much fun. So let's talk about this series of books, because I was saying before we started the show that I am blown away by how productive you are. I mean, this is the 23rd or 24th?
So it's the 23rd book with my protagonist, Scott Harvath.
Okay.
My 24th overall. One year I did two books. I had done a spinoff series about an all-female Delta Force team called the Athena Project. Mm-hmm. And so I think before we even get to your next question, the one thing kind of as a level set that I like to do for listeners is I tell people that my books are like the James Bond movies. If the newest Bond film is at your local multiplex and you've never seen a Bond movie before, you can go see it. It doesn't matter. You're going to get caught up real quick. You're going to know who Bond is and all that kind of stuff. Same thing with my books. So if you're a longtime reader of Brad Thor novels, you're going to love the new one. And if you've never read a Brad Thor book before and you want to start with Shadow of Doubt, you're not going to be lost at all.
Yeah. No, and that's this is a thing I do like to ask writers of series, because they often get a little nervous. They're like, well, you know, I want to make sure everybody knows that they can jump in and just read this.
Yeah.
It's not, you don't have to follow it. But that's 23 books in this series in 22 years?
Yeah, my first
came out in 2002?
January of 2002, yeah, right after 9/11.
Yeah. Let's talk about 9/11 and the world of politics and, you know, in international intrigue, because it is I wouldn't describe this new one as ripped from the headlines exactly, but there's a lot of stuff about Ukraine and Russia, and it feels like it's ripped from the headlines.
Well, you know, Dan Brown, who wrote The Da Vinci Code, gave me a really nice blurb once, and Dan said, Brad Thor's books are as current as tomorrow's headlines. So I call what I do faction, where you don't know where the facts end and the fiction begins. So I like to beat the headlines. I always, you know, my number one job is to give you the best white knuckle, edge of your seat thrill ride that I'm capable of. That's my job. I'm here to entertain you. If I beat the headlines and some stuff comes out, that's terrific. I love that. Even more important, if you close one of my thrillers and you go, oh, actually, he brought up a couple things I'd never heard of before. That's kind of cool. One of the neatest compliments I get is people say, you know, I have to read your books with my laptop open or my phone nearby because I see things in there and I go, he must have made that up. And then I Google it and it's like, whoa, that's actually true. So for me, the entertainment factor is number one. I want you entertained. This is your toes in the sand, book in the hand kind of experience. I want you to have that great beach read. But then if you close the book smarter and you've learned a couple of things, I think that's also just kind of a nice bonus.
I will say this does make a good beach read. I literally read it while on the way to the beach and then kind of adjacent to the beach, not on the beach. I have two children, hard to take
that's
away
tough.
Attention from them on the actual beach. But it's a great vacation read. I got through it and, you know, 5 hours or whatever on my Kindle, where all e-readers, you know, all preview copies go now.
Yeah.
Straight to the Kindle.
Yeah.
It's I have thoughts about that too. I'm not the biggest, you know, I like the physical media. I like to be able to.
I do too. We sell a lot of e-books and I get it. And it's tough for me because I'm on tour now. Right. And I've got 8 books on my nightstand, and I had to look and decide, what am I going to take with me?
Yeah.
Because I've got Ann Applebaum's new book, Autocracy, yeah, Inc. And then I've got some, which is nonfiction. Then I've got some fiction, and it's really tough. But if you've got an e-reader, you've got everything with you at all times. So I get it. I'm pro e-reader, but I really like sitting in my favorite place in the house with an actual physical book. I love that.
I'll say, look, and nobody cares about this from my end, but I will say as a reviewer, it's nice having the physical copy there that you can write notes in. That but it's sense. Also nice to have the e-reader here, which I can just, I'm turning on my Kindle right now, and I'm pulling up the highlights. I want to read just one passage from the book, because it really, again, there's this kind of ripped from the headlines feeling about it that I think will give people a sense of where you're coming from, right? So this is, this is a passage where they are talking about essentially Russian psyops on the Ukraine invasion. Okay, mm-hmm. All right. This is from the book. Nevertheless, Russia began spinning tales of secret U.S.-backed bioweapons labs in hopes of painting itself as a, quote, truth teller, end quote, with valid reasons for its invasion. Ukraine is a sinister country engaged in biological weapons development, and America as an evil force whose support of Ukraine was totally suspect. It was prime Russian propaganda, which unfortunately found a home in certain corners of the American citizenry. It didn't matter that the claims were easily disproven with a modicum of research. For some people who were angry with the world, their government, or whatever, it fit a predetermined narrative that was simply too good to challenge. And that's what continues to get me. The angrier people are, the more they are susceptible to malign foreign influence. And that does feel, this is me again. Right. That does feel very much in tune with certainly how I feel
me
about
too.
A lot of the world
me
right now.
Too. And so, again, my number one job is to entertain you. But I do put things in my books, like, all right, so last year's book, I did a total like spin on the lunacy of these idiots who believe in Comet Ping Pong and that the Democratic Party is running like child sex trafficking through the basement of Comet Ping Pong in D.C., the pizza place that doesn't have a basement. So I created a yacht club in D.C. on the Potomac where they were claiming that there was sex trafficking going through the basement of a yacht club built on pylons over the water on the Potomac where there's no basement. So I do, I forget who said it, and I don't want to give it to Andrew Breitbart because I don't know that Breitbart actually coined this, but there is that saying that politics is downstream from culture.
Sure.
And I think that we've become so siloed in the United States. I get asked, particularly when I used to do a lot of television when I had been involved with the Department of Homeland Security and helping them brainstorm terrorist scenarios. And I would do TV and people would ask me, okay, so you're in this analytic red cell unit for the government. What are you most afraid of? Where do you think our biggest national security risk is? And I would always say the internet. And people would say, the internet? What are you talking about? And I said, you get so many people now who get their news from Facebook. So they're in these Facebook groups where everybody believes and thinks and speaks the same way that they do. So they let their guard down. And that's exactly where the Russians, the North Koreans, the Iranians, and the Chinese are pumping in disinformation because they know these people in these Facebook groups are not testing things. Too good to check. Too good to challenge. Listen, I hate populism. I hate QAnon and populism. Those are two of the biggest things I hate. I just cannot stand the way conspiracy theories have run amok in the United States, the lack of trust in expertise and institutions. I mean, if I could pay Tom Nichols to just write books for me on a regular basis, I'd put Tom Nichols on staff and Tom Nichols would do nothing but pump out articles and books. Just like I'd have a main lineup right into my veins. Because I really believe in a lot of what Tom has said. And I know he's been on a bunch of the different podcasts and everything with you guys. We live in absolutely idiotic times. But those idiotic times don't just come out of nowhere. So we're dealing with a big fallout from globalization, right? So we were able to offshore all of this manufacturing, all these jobs, because it helped maximize profits for shareholders and all that kind of stuff. And I'm a capitalist, I will tell you right now. But it was very short-sighted because during all this offshoring, all this globalization, nobody said, what happens to this town in Pennsylvania or Ohio where the grandfather worked at this factory, mm-hmm. dad worked at this factory? Now you got a son who's in his mid-40s and the factory's gone. What does that guy do? because it's not like the Great Depression or the Dust Bowl or any of that stuff. We now have government assistance, so people can get paid so that they don't completely fall into destitution. They're not going to be destitute. They're going to get government subsidies, but there isn't this impetus to move where the jobs are. And I'm oversimplifying this. I know I'm doing a terrible job and I'm oversimplifying it, but we really took our eyes off the ball. In pursuit of profit, we forgot about people. And again, I'm not a nationalist. I'm not a populist at all, but I understand the backlash. And I think that's one of the things that I appreciate the most. And as a subscriber in all, to be completely candid, as a subscriber to The Bulwark, that's one of the things I enjoy the most about the material that I get. And I'm on The Bulwark 6, 7, 8 times a day, gobbling up everything that's there, is I appreciate that there's a variety of viewpoints. And I know you guys get pushback from some members that don't like the way things are being told. I like the fact that the truth is happening here. That's important for me. So, listen, we don't own this country. I don't care how you vote, Republican, Democrat, Independent, you're a green person, it doesn't matter. We are merely stewards of this republic, and it's incumbent upon all of us to hand a freer, more equitable, safer, more democratic country to the next generation than was handed to us. So I'm a big believer in truth, and unless, you know, you can have your own opinions, but you can't have your own facts. So if I put little things like that into my novels, so to wind it all the way back to where this question started, sorry.
This is good.
So, but if we wind it back to that, if I put that stuff in, I may get a reader who loves my books, who really thinks there are these active biolabs in Ukraine, and they're going to read my spy thriller, and they're going to see two characters maybe that they like, who actually explain that there weren't active bioweapons labs in Ukraine. There were actual biolabs that were supposed to help in case foot and mouth disease exploded in Ukraine, or there was some other sort of thing that happens on farms. These labs that the United States was sponsoring, there was a mobile unit that the Ukrainians had to back up the military in case there was an outbreak of disease of some sort, you know, mad cow disease or something like this. Mm-hmm. They're not developing weapons over there, and the U.S. never was. But this stuff catches on in certain corners of the internet. People believe it. My thing is that if you're angry, you're consuming your information incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
If you're energized, if you're interested in learning more, and if you're trying to dissuade people of poorly held opinions, if you're trying to share with people the truth, then you're doing a good job. Anger is the easiest motivator. It works on the right. It works on the left. That's how they get people out to vote. You got to be angry to get people out to vote. But as an author, if I can put a little bit of stuff in there where people are I'm not on the soapbox. My job is to entertain, not to be political, mm-hmm. not to change anybody's minds. But if I can put some information out there in a discussion between two characters and it makes somebody go, huh? And that's one of those things. They go to their laptop or they go to their phone and they Google that and they're like, oh, I never knew that. Oh, I thought that was different. I've done my job. If I entertain you, I've done my job as an author. If you're better informed, then I've done my job as a citizen, as an American.
See, I love this answer. And it's precisely how I read that passage was, this is entertaining. It's within the flow of the story. It is a minor digression at worst, but really it's just part of the story. Do you ever worry though, when you're writing something like this, that you're going to alienate readers? I mean, I know this is certainly, this is a thing people worry about.
So what the listeners can't see, obviously the listeners can't see anything, but it's somebody who works very closely with me. We're signing books in this room, and Sonny has been very kind to set up in this room, and I'm signing books for my event tonight. But I have a colleague who's in the room, and I actually had a different – so my editor insists on a story – no matter where my books take place in the world – one storyline has to exist in the United States to anchor American readers to sure. the U.S. And so in Shadow of Doubt, that was all happening inside the CIA, where they were trying to figure out what was happening in a particular part of the world. And so whenever you dip back into the CIA storyline, you're trying to figure out what's going on and what were the Russians up to. That wasn't the original storyline. Okay. The original storyline was about all that nonsense coming out of the Claremont Institute about a Red Caesar and the need for a Red Caesar. And this colleague of mine sitting at the end of the table down here waiting for me to jump back into signing books actually helped ground me. She said, listen, you know, we don't want to alienate anybody. You don't want to open up a restaurant and say, hey, open for business, unless you're one of these three categories. Mm. We don't want you to eat here. We want everybody to eat here. So I have my concerns about where we're going politically. And luckily, I have people around me that'll say, great. That's great that you have those concerns. You can go support the Bulwark and all those guys and do whatever you want and just get as dark as you want with JVL or get your entertainment stuff from Sunny, whatever it is. But that may be too much for the book. So I do have people around me that say, okay, let's not alienate people. And could you find another potential, meanwhile, back on the ranch U.S. storyline? And I think that kind of check, if you will, made the book better. Because I think that storyline that happens at the CIA is one of the best things I've ever written. I'm really proud of it. But I would not have done that but for somebody around me saying, eh.
No, I think that, and look, you know, this is balancing that art and commerce and also trying to keep the reader, not losing the reader, is the biggest thing.
Yes.
And I know this is a thing that some of our readers and listeners get annoyed at me about. Everyone wants to watch a movie. Everyone wants to be entertained by a movie or read a book or listen to music. And if you can get a message in a slightly less aggressive way, maybe put it that way, I think that's a better way to do it.
And yes, I agree. So I was looking for drama at home in the United States. And that Red Caesar stuff that is just pure insanity, as far as I'm concerned, that we need to blow up the system and put in our own Caesar. Yeah. If you know anything about history, I mean, go back and watch the series Rome, which is amazing, which is a great series. My wife and I are rewatching it because it came out in 2005. And I said, should we give it a try? I bet we don't even remember most of it. And it's even better now to watch Rome than it was back in 2005 because the United States has so completely changed. I mean, I remember being on Bill O'Reilly's show and Bill O'Reilly kind of scoffing that, oh, America's not in this Roman period and all this kind of stuff. And so for me, the storyline that I did, my number one job is to entertain people. The storyline that I did is a very current, very serious thing going on at the CIA where they're concerned about Russia suggesting that it may use tactical nukes to advance its interests in Ukraine and beyond Ukraine. I mean, it's one of the biggest fears that Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia have. So this whole storyline that I chose was actually a better storyline, and it was more exciting, and everything in it is legit. And I discovered a big geopolitical strategist named Peter Zion that used to work at down here in Texas at a group called Stratfor, and he's brilliant. And he put forth this thing that basically, yeah, Putin's crazy and he wants to re-knit the Soviet Union and all this kind of stuff. But what most people don't understand is that Russia itself is wide and flat and nearly impossible to defend against an invading army. And there's 9 gateways into Russia. And so what Putin is doing now in Ukraine and wanting to push beyond that is trying to get control of all these back doors that lead into Russia that the Soviet Union had control over after World War II, but lost control when the Soviet Union broke apart. And I was like, God, that's good. That's fascinating. As much as I thought I knew about world history, I didn't know this. So injecting that stuff into the book rather than a Claremont Institute fictitious group and Red Caesar and all that kind of stuff, I think the way that I did it with the CIA storyline instead, and I've been looking forward to this interview because I knew I could kind of give stuff to listeners that most people aren't going to know about the behind the scenes of the book, about the sausage being made a little bit, because it is a delicate balancing act. Elmore Leonard famously said to young writers that the best piece, he had 2 pieces of advice for young writers. Number one, never start with the weather. It was a dark and stormy night. And number two, leave out the parts that people skip. My dad was convinced that Clancy, swore to God, that Clancy got paid by the word because his books were so huge. And so I always swore that if there was a like a missile dropped off a Predator drone, I would just say there's two special forces guys in the bushes with a laser pointed at the target. And that's I don't need to go into it, gyroscopes and what kind of fuel and that kind of stuff. So it is the delicate balancing act when you're doing what I do, when you're somebody who – listen, politics is my baseball. I love culture. I love movies. Hopefully we'll talk about the TV show that we're getting into with the books and stuff. But I am a big believer in freedom, democracy, in like I said earlier, leaving the country to the next generation stronger than was handed to us. So the constant thing that I have to do is how do I entertain people first and foremost, and then – how do I weave in some current events that I think are important to raise without getting people to say, oh, screw this guy, and set the book down? Because I want to have a delicatessen that everybody wants to come to, whether you're black, you're Jewish, you're gay, you're white, you're polka dot, you're green. I don't care. I want everybody to come into my deli and have a great meal.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Yeah. Well, there's so much there, and I want to talk about TV stuff, because it is a fascinating moment for, I think, books of the sort in the world of streaming and everything. But one thing I want to just drill down on for a second is the research angle here, because one thing I really appreciate about your books is that they're not jargony. It's not, you know, kind of gun porny. You get some of that.
That can be overkill very quickly.
Often loses me.
Yep.
Even though, look, I own a handgun. I know how to shoot, but it's not my thing.
No. Weight of the bullets and all that nonsense. Yeah. No, I agree with you.
But there's still obviously a lot of research that goes into these books. You mentioned Stratfor. Those guys are fascinating. Mm-hmm. And there's also clearly you're talking to, you know, military guys, special forces guys about what they're doing.
I buy a lot of pitchers of beer and a lot of steak dinners and ask what's keeping you up at night.
Well, on top of that, also just like training and tactics and that sort of thing. What is the actual research process like for you? I mean, you just sit down with these guys and chat.
So to set that up, So I've enjoyed a lot of Stephen King's work. He's at Simon & Schuster, just like I am. And I always say that I would never suggest that Stephen King's job is any easier than mine.
Mm.
But I will say that I got a lot more rules than Stephen King has.
Mm.
Stephen King can take a dead cat, plant it in the pet cemetery, and the cat comes back. Not as the same cat, but the cat comes back. I have to stay within a certain kind of – there's a perimeter around me of what really happens within – the diplomatic community, the special operations community. You know, I can't have Navy SEALs running around with laser guns and nonsense like that. I can't make things up the way somebody like a Stephen King can. And I'm a fan of Stephen King. So I say that with the utmost respect for King. But his world and what he can do, he creates his own rules. He can break his own rules. I can't. I have to stay within, this is the way the FBI works. This is the way things work at the White House, all that kind of stuff. So over the years, It's like any other business, whether you're a dentist, a doctor, a lawyer, a plumber, you build your network. You know, you're building relationships in your business. And I've done that as a thriller author. So I'm able to go to people who, you know, if I need something from the CIA, I'm able to go there, or the Defense Intelligence Agency, or the NSA, or whatever. And I got a great story, if we have time, about Mandy Patinkin and the former CIA director. That's kind of fun and culture.
I've got a great story. I don't know if I have time.
I'll do it. So I was out with my agent for dinner in New York City, and I lived in Greece, and I love Greek food. And so we were at a Greek restaurant, and it was the end of the evening, and there's one other table, a few tables over from us, and I'd noticed earlier that they were there, and it was Mandy Patinkin and General Hayden, who was the former NSA director, mm-hmm. and he was the CIA director. And Mandy Patinkin had become the CIA director on Homeland, which will connect to my TV show when we talk about that. But it was really funny. So end of the night, they were on coffee, and I figured, okay, now I'll go over. And so I went over, and I introduced myself. I said, I'm Brad Thor. You know, I write thrillers, and I just want you both to know I'm a big fan of both of yours. And I said, I'd love to have a picture. And so Mandy Patinkin, being the Hollywood actor, goes, you know, he figures, okay, yeah, I'm happy to take a photo with you. He thought I wanted a picture with him. And I handed Mandy Patinkin my phone, and I said, thank you. Could you take a picture of me with the real CIA director? And I put my arm around General Hayden, and Hayden loved it, because I'm sure nobody recognizes him outside of D.C.
Yeah.
Everybody recognizes Mandy Patinkin. Mandy Patinkin was such a good sport. He laughed. He took the photo. And then I got a photo of me with the two of them. And it was a really fun experience that I became friendly with General Hayden after that, and have been on a couple of panels that he's asked me to be on and that kind of stuff. So so there's a certain amount of me networking, and there's also a certain amount of serendipity that happens. Once you get out there and your name is known and people have read your books, people offer themselves up. Hey, if you ever want to do this, I work at DARPA. I've got to run those traps and make sure that it's a legit person and that they actually do this. But that is one of the neat things for me, is that my network of experts has grown, not only because I'm networking from one person to another, but people have also reached out to me and said, I love your books. I'd love to help if you ever write about this subject or whatever. It's very nice.
Well, and this is a community of people who I think really enjoy reading about themselves and them and their work in a realistic way, come across as junky and trashy.
And I do my homework. I do my research. I get it right. Anybody who helps on a book gets to read it before it goes to the publisher. And what I've had happen a handful of times over my career is I've had people say, all right, I remember telling you point A. And a couple of weeks later, we were in Alexandria. We were having dinner, and I told you point C. I've finished reading the manuscript. Point B needs to come out. I'm like, you didn't tell me point B. This point B needs to come out. I'm like, oh, I guessed it. I got it right. And so if they tell me something's got to come out, I don't want to point. First of all, I'm a good citizen. If they tell me it's got to come out, there's a reason it has to come out. And there's no argument. It comes out because I want to be a good citizen. And also, I don't want to poison the well. What idiot would go against one of his experts and say, no, I guessed it. But because I guessed it, I'm putting it in. No, I'm not going to do that. So I take stuff out if I have to. Hasn't happened a bunch, but it's happened a couple of times.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. All right. Let's talk TV, because I do feel like this is a really interesting moment. I mean, Jack Reacher is a huge hit on Amazon. You've got The Night Agent on Netflix.
Yep.
Huge hit. The
Night Manager was a great limited series.
The Night Manager.
Fantastic.
Very good. What's the what's the Gary Oldman show on Apple TV?
Slow Horses.
Oh, Horses is so one of my favorite. It's so good. It's nice that it also comes out every year.
Yeah. You
know? It's a rare feat in the world of streaming these days. And you've got to have something in the works here.
So we do. So I joke that I could write a book about all the twists and turns in Hollywood, because we've had so many options that haven't resulted in something being made in a town like Hollywood with so many beautiful people. I've kissed every frog in that town. But what was interesting is we had the producers, Sean and Yvette Reddick of Black Klansman, which was a great movie, got a lot of nods for awards, and Get Out. And so Black Klansman was actually based on a book that they had discovered and decided to develop. And so during COVID, they also did on Netflix the Jamie Foxx film Day Shift, about vampires. And one of the Francos was in there. I think it was Dave Franco that was in it. It was great. It was fun. It was the director came out of 8711 Entertainment, which is Chad Stahelski, the director of John Wick. That's his stable of talent there. They do great stuff. And they came to me and they said, listen, they came to my rep and said, we're big fans of Brad's books and we'd like to help develop them for TV. And we talked a little bit. And Sean's an interesting guy because he used to work at WME. And so he's great. He's a great with the business side. So he's not only a great creative, but he's great on the business end. And it's funny because a buddy of mine had been a longtime agent at WME, a friend of mine from high school. And I asked Sean Reddick if he knew him. He goes, yeah, his assistant went home sick one day. That was the first desk I was ever put on at WME. And it was kind of a small world story and really, really cool. So anyway, the Reddicks came to me and said, we want to do this, came to my rep. And my rep said, I like these people. They get stuff done. They don't just have this huge bloated development slate. They pick stuff that they think they can get made. So we said, I want you to get on the phone with them. And so got on, love them. And they said, okay. They said, so you're trusting us. Who would you like, if we're going to make a TV series, who would you like to direct it? I said, does it have to be a TV director? They go, no, it could be any director in the world you want. Tell us who's your first choice? And I said, easy. Chad Stahelski, John Wick. And they're like, really? You love the Wick movies? And I said, yeah, I love the Wick movies, but there's Easter eggs in the Wick movies that nobody knows about. I'm like, what are you talking about? I said, in every John Wick movie, there's a copy of the book Shibumi by Trevanian. And they're like, no way. I'm like, yeah, nobody knows it unless they know Trevanian. So in the first Wick movie, I'm only going to give one away. Everybody listening is going to have to go back and watch. I'll give one away for what Chad did and then his directing partner who left after the first Wick and then went and did Bullet Train, okay, with Brad Pitt. So in John Wick, when Wick goes to the airport to do the donuts in his car and everything, he pulls up at the guard booth. The guard is reading Shibumi by Trevanian. And anybody who loves the genre that I write in, Trevanian was amazing back in the 70s and everything. 70s and I think into the 80s, but Trevanian was amazing. And so Stahelski, the legend is Stahelski takes a backpack to the set and he's always got the book there. And he decides the moment he wants to put the Trevanian book in the movie. And then his partner, another stuntman turned director who had been with him for the first Wick movie, when he did Bullet Train with Brad Pitt, one of the people on the train is a woman dressed in kind of a plaid skirt with like a midriff button-down shirt. She looks like kind of like a Japanese, sexy Japanese schoolgirl in Bullet Train. She's reading Shibumi. So both Chad and his old directing partner. So that is a really cool Easter egg that listeners now are going
to
know about.
Well, I got to go back and watch the other three John Wick movies.
So they're in there. So they're in there. So that's kind of a cool thing. So I've loved Stahelski forever. And so they went to and I had had another time in Hollywood and I had some people introduce me to Chad. And Chad, I knew Chad liked the book, my books. And so when the Reddick said, who do you want to direct? I'm like, there's only one person. I'm like, it's Chad. And so they said, let's see what we can do. And they got Chad interested. And Chad said, okay, I'm interested. So you guys keep putting this together, but I'm interested. So the Reddicks came back to me and said, all right, obviously we're putting this together. We're executive producers, but you're going to want another producer on board with a lot of TV experience who understands whether or not this person will be running the writer's room, whatever. But you want to bring that person on. The Reddicks, I've gotten such an education on Hollywood through the Reddicks. And they said, so if you could pick any EP in the television world, somebody really knows their stuff TV-wise, who would it be? And I said, I get anybody I want. They said, you can ask for anybody you want. Let's see what happens. And I said, okay, I've only got one name. You guys have to make this happen. They said, who is it? I said, Howard Gordon. I said, Howard was the force behind 24, behind Homeland. I said, Howard's great. And so they got Howard. They got Howard on board. So they got Chad. They got Howard. Howard has an exclusive at Sony. And so we're now at Sony. And then we've gone through a couple of writers. Unfortunately, we had a writer who passed away during the writer's strike, Manny Coto, who was just fantastic. Great story about his family fleeing Cuba. It was such a great, great guy. And Manny died of cancer during the writer's strike. And so we started looking for other writers, and we've got a great writer now. He's fantastic. His name is Steve Lightfoot, and Steve wrote The Punisher, two seasons for Netflix. And then my daughter is a huge Steve Lightfoot fan because my daughter loved the series on NBC with Lawrence Fishburne and Mads Mikkelsen. Hannibal.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Steve did a lot of the writing for Hannibal. So for those who never saw it on NBC, it was the precursor to Silence of the Lambs. This is Hannibal Lecter as a practicing psychiatrist before he gets busted. And Gillian Anderson, I am like a massive Gillian Anderson fan. Massive. And so she's in it. She's sexy as hell, but I've yet to see something in which she's not sexy as hell. And so Steve is unbelievable. He's got a series right now running on Apple TV called Shantaram, mm-hmm. which is based on a book, which is fascinating, which is some of the most gritty, compelling, dark stuff I've seen on TV, and it's handled so well. So Lightfoot's fantastic. So my rep said to me recently, he said, Brad, I get it. You've been at this game for 2 decades. You've got 24 books. You've kissed a lot of frogs. He said, they teach us this in law school. Sometimes the best deal is a deal you don't make. He said, every single time you've had something not come to fruition is totally worth it because you've never had an A-plus team like you have right now. So Stahelski, Chad, our director, is off doing the reboot of the Highlander film, mm-hmm. which was a great movie. Christoph Lambert, Sean Connery, it's one of my favorites. So he's redoing that. When Chad comes back, then they go out with Lightfoot. So Chad and Lightfoot with Sony behind them go out and they start pitching to all the streamers. And of course, because Howard Gordon's involved, you know, Howard's old broadcasters will be interested in this kind of stuff. So that's where we are now, is we're waiting for him to come back. He should be back soon. And then this fall we'll be out pitching, trying to find a home for our TV series.
Yeah. Are you guys thinking, is this going to be broadcast possible, or is this, you know, streamer cable all the way?
Well, I think it changes. I think the pitch is a little bit different if it's broadcast versus, so, you know, and I said broadcast, I shouldn't have said broadcast. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Sonny, I get it messed up. I'm drawing a total blank right now. If Homeland was Showtime or HBO?
Homeland was
Showtime. Showtime. Okay. So I don't necessarily mean broadcast. That may be an area they go, but I think to be able to do it the way we want to do it, it is different.
Hannibal was network. That was on NBC.
And I was stunned. It was, the amount of blood and the way,
pushing it.
It was really, pushing it. I would love to be on a platform that also sells books. Yeah, I'm thrilled to be on Netflix. That's great. Just having it out there will turn a lot of people onto my books.
Yeah.
So I'm happy for wherever it ends up. If that's a Netflix, if that's at Max, if it's, if it's Hulu, wherever this ends up, I'm going to be very, very happy. A lot of people said, oh, they're not doing any Jack Ryan. Maybe Amazon's going to want to have you because you sell so many books there. And I said, what's interesting is, I don't think there's as much communication between the two areas of Amazon as you would think. I don't know anything about it, but I don't necessarily know that Amazon Studios is picking up projects based on how many books can the book selling side of the house sell. But I don't know. I'm very quickly getting into territory where I shouldn't be speaking because I don't know what's going on.
Well, it's funny because I know the sense I get from the folks who know what Amazon is doing is that Amazon itself doesn't really know what it's doing. But I will say the thing that Amazon has excelled at the most are what we could call dad books, right? Like the dad book adaptation kind of genre. Again, Jack Reacher.
That's been
Without
very
Remorse,
successful.
Jack Ryan. I mean, like, just that's, it's really the thing that they seem to be best at.
And by the way, that Michael B. Jordan did a great job in Without Remorse. And Chad Stahelski, our director, is tapped to do the next film with him. So I think the ideal situation for us would be to be at a platform where we can do a season of shows, then do a feature, and then do a season of shows. That is what we've kind of kicked around and said, this would be different. Nobody's done this, and this could be really cool.
Yeah.
Particularly because as we've positioned it, Sony has bought, in getting all my books, they bought the Marvel Universe. I mean, there's so many books here. We could do 2 books a season. We could combine plot lines and things like that. There's tons of characters, so they could have spinoffs and all that kind of stuff. So that's been part of the way we've tried to steer this is don't just focus on one book or another book. Focus on you've got the Marvel Universe here, and how do you maximize this Marvel Universe?
Yeah. No, I mean, just being a reader, not a producer or Hollywood executive, it would not be hard to stitch together a 4 or 5 season series out of, you know, probably 7 or 8 books. Like, that's not hard. It is interesting to hear you talk about throwing features into the mix too, because that does feel like, that feels like the holy grail of the current multimedia environment, right? It's not just the streaming series that you go see. It's the movie that you go see in the theaters.
Yeah.
You come back and you get, you know, Marvel and Disney have kind of done that with the Disney Plus stuff. And
yeah, the Mandalorian and all that kind of stuff.
And it's, or with the Star Wars stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like it's hard. It's hard to do. I know they tried to do it. I'm sorry, I'm rambling now because this is fascinating to me. But I know they tried. I know Amazon tried to do it with the Dark Tower book, Stephen King.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was that, you know, kind of all fell apart because it's hard. It's hard
it's tough.
To get all those pieces working together in unison.
It is hard. And so, you know, one of the things that's been kicked around, not in Hollywood, but in my office, is my newest book, Shadow of Doubt, it's everybody on my side of the Hollywood fence who's read it, including my reps, are like, this is a limited series right there in this one book, Shadow of Doubt. It's very much like The Night Manager. You could do this over 6 to 8 episodes because of the different rich storylines and the different exotic European locations and that kind of a thing. So it is fun. It's interesting. Like I said, the players on this are just so good. All these guys do is make money. I mean, you'd be crazy, any streamer or whatever, to not buy it in the room. Because the other thing that we bring to this, and this is where I was very serious in our negotiations with Sony, is, as I said, listen, guys, I said, I was an author of thrillers before I met you. I'm going to be an author of thrillers long after I meet you. I like you guys, but I'll tell you why I like more. I like my bosses, the readers of my books. So I want to stay as involved as possible. I understand. I'm not here to tell you how to make television shows, but I am here to say I created the universe. I want to be on board. You know, I don't want just a vanity producer title. I want to be an active producer, and I want to be a writer on the series, which I got, because I get it. We're not going to go word for word out of the books to screen. We're going to make changes. But you guys are going to sell this by saying, look at how many books Thor has sold. You're going to sell it to a Netflix or whatever, because the belief is going to be my readers will come and watch this. And people who maybe are not Netflix subscribers are going to sign up. That's the hope Netflix is going to have, right? That my readers who are not Netflix people will sign up because they love the books. They want to see the TV show. And I said, I get that. That's business. I'm cool with that. But in exchange, I have to be able to be in a position and have a relationship with you guys where if you want to make changes, we can at least talk about them. And I can say, if you change this, it affects this. So what if, tell me why we need this change, and then let me see if I can put my own spin on it so that when it comes time to promote this, I can go to my readers, I can go on social media, I can do interviews and say, all right, for all of you who've read Shadow of Doubt, there were some changes made for the limited series. I was involved with every one of them. You're going to love it because I love it. And so that's the thing. I said, if you guys are going to sell this based on Brad Thor brings all these eyeballs, then I really want to be intimately involved, because I want, if you're going to ask for my readers to come and watch this, I have to make sure that you treat them with as much respect as I do. That was my big thing.
No, I think that's fair. That's fair. And is there, I mean, look, here's, again, we get into questions of art and commerce here, and it's hard. But there has to be some concern that the role of Russia in these books. I don't want to give away anything.
That's okay. They're the bad guy in a couple of books. But the
Russians are a pretty big part of Shadow of Death.
Absolutely,
like they are, and that's a big market. You know, there are movies sold there, or streaming services work in there. Is there any worry or concern there, or is that a just something that's on the table, maybe.
I think it's easily a question. So listen, the mind is like a parachute. It has to be open to work. I'm open to anything. I'm open to any discussions. You know, I've got books where China's the bad guy. So, you know, it is, are they going to backburner certain? Listen, there's 24 books. There's stuff in here. There's lots of different ways to skin the cat. We'll see what's going to happen. But I will say this, okay? I have so much respect for Sony. Let me give you one story about what Sony did that tells me Sony's a good company and they appreciate their role in the entertainment industry in the United States. The Chinese did not want the last Spider-Man movie unless the Statue of Liberty was taken out of it. And Sony told the Chinese to go pound sand. All right? That told me everything I need to know about my partners at Sony. They said, we are absolutely not taking that out. If you don't want to show the movie, don't show the movie. But we're not pulling the Statue of Liberty. It was a ridiculous request from the Chinese. And I love the way Sony stood up to that. So good for them. So what I'm seeing out of Sony is, I don't think anybody in Hollywood's going to necessarily antagonize a potential big marketplace. But I loved that when a pushback came from China, it likely came right down from the CCP, right? That Sony pushed back and said, no, we're not going to do that. Just don't take the movie. If the Statue of Liberty bugs you that much, don't take the movie.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Good for them. What's next? Where is Scott off to next? It feels like everything feels all wrapped up. I feel like we're,
There's more coming. Okay. I've
started writing.
I have not. So never. I like to set my books against what I think will be the next big geopolitical set piece we're talking about. So I'm still, I know kind of the part of the world it's going to be in. I know what's going on for Harvath. I know, again, you can pick up these books at any point and be great with them. You don't need to, like the Bond movies, like we said earlier, you don't need to have seen a James Bond movie previously to go to the newest one at your multiplex. So I know the part of the world Harvath's going to be in. I know how he gets there from this book. And I kind of have an idea where we're going, but I'm not sure yet. And my buddy David Morrell, he introduces himself as Rambo's daddy, because that was his first book, was mm-hmm. Rambo. And Morrell said that your idea as an author is the rocket fuel that needs to power your rocket over the next year to its destination, whether that's Mars or wherever it is. And he said you need to be very careful about talking about the ultimate destination of that rocket, because every time you do, you hand off a little bit of the fuel. Mm. So I am always the tight-lipped guy. I joke that my competitors, I would normally make the joke, like, I know whose payroll you're on, Sonny. I know who's paying you to try to get next year's idea out of me now. But no, I've got some ideas, and right now my focus is on promoting Shadow of Doubt, and then when I get off the road, off a book tour, then I'll really buckle down and start working on next summer's book.
All right, one last question here, because I'm just blown away by the pace of these books. How long does it actually take you to write first draft, second draft, from pen down to pen up?
Yeah. Every book is different. I kind of joke, like, how long's a piece of string? Mm. Every piece of string is different, different length. So it depends on, so I want to pick a topic that I'm fascinated by, and I want to research it. Some things are easier to learn about. My job is if I find a real cool geopolitical thing that I want to weave into the background, because the books are, it's not a textbook. This is your beach read. So to make it that simple and that fun and that engaging while you're sitting on the beach with your toes in the sand, there's an old quote that says, easy reading is damn hard writing. And so it'll depend on what I ultimately decide on being my background kind of geopolitical set piece and how hard that is for me to learn about, because it's not until I'm an expert. It's not until I feel I've gotten enough of it that I can break it down and make it interesting and fun and just kind of have it be in the background that I'm capable of doing it. So every book is different. I come to each one of my novels as if it's the first time I've ever written a thriller, and I have to ask myself, is this idea in the way I'm going to execute it good enough to get me a contract with a big publishing company and to hopefully land me at the top of the bestseller list? So that's the question I wrestle with every year as I sit down to write the novel. So everyone takes, some are easier, some take longer. This one, we had to move the pub date because I didn't get it done on time because I just said it's not ready to go. It's not ready to go. And I'm glad we pushed the pub date back by a couple of weeks because it made all the difference. I'm very, very proud of this book, Shadow of Doubt.
Yeah. It's great. Everyone should pick it up. It's out now. As you know, I always like to close these interviews by asking if there's anything I should have asked, if there's anything folks should know about. I didn't get to. What should folks know about your books? Industry, whatever, politics, whatever you want to talk about.
You know, it's a great question. It's funny because, you know, again, I'm trying to create an environment of addition, not subtraction. So I try not to go down the politics road too often. I used to be very, very political, and I try to kind of stay out of it as much as I can. Personally, it's my baseball. Politics is my baseball. I am a rabid consumer of all political news and all that kind of stuff. But you know, I get it. People often, particularly right of center people, were upset when actors would come out and talk their politics and stuff. It was kind of this, you know, shut up and sing sort of a thing. And I want people to approach my books and enjoy my books for the entertainment value, not because of my political stance. I think anybody listening to this podcast who's a Bulwark supporter, we could sit down, we could have a drink together, we could have dinner together, we could spend the weekend together, we'd have a great time. I think I'm in front of a very friendly audience for where I am politically. But I do try now, we're more fractured than ever before, so I do try to play those cards close to my best. So I think we covered it all, Sonny, and I can't believe it because I listen to your podcast all the time and I thought for sure we'd get to this point and there'd be a million things. I'm like, don't forget to say this, don't forget to say that. You know how Sonny leaves this at the end. But we got to all of it, man.
I'll think of something in a day. It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
The width of the staircase, right?
Boy. Brad, thank you for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Sonny.
And have fun here in Dallas. I don't know if you're going to be around for a day or two, but there's restaurants and bars.
Oh no, it's a great town. It's a great town. Glad to be here.
All right. Again, my name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark, and I'll be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. We'll see you guys then.